So last night, at a very profound and wonderful talk from Kirisara, he mentioned this very, also very profound and pithy teaching, the Mula Sutta, 10 themes of contemplation around the arising and passing of the world. Brilliance. You have to really be in awe at the brilliance of the Buddha's transmission. You know, this was really looking at the nuts and bolts of consciousness to 2,500 years ago, when we in Europe were sort of wandering around hitting each other over the head with planks of wood. You know, all respect to the, you know, voyagers of consciousness that came from the east. So rooted in desire are all things, born of attention are all things, arising on contact are all things, and converging in feeling are all things. This arising of our experience of world and self arising together, this is the mechanism by which this actually comes about, comes to be. This thing, dhammas, in the understanding, the Dharma with a capital D, the timeless, unconditioned Dharma, we've been contemplating and bringing into our chant as the reflections, as one of the central reflections on the refuge. Dhammas, D, small d, D-H-A-M-M-A-S, means thing, something that comes to be a sort of thingness, the thingness of conditionality. Ultimately, there aren't really any things, but we have the perception and the designation through the perceptual aspect of the mind, and then the concretization of what's perceived through through thought, through concept, through designation, through labeling. So then something that's actually fluid. And if you really broke down the essence of materiality and thingness, it's just sort of pure light, really. Even the quantum physicists, pure energy. But we have this construct of thingness, and that sense of thingness is rooted in where the mind is conditioned, how it's conditioned to move. This word of desire is really about this sort of volitionality, how this movement towards something, the movement towards creating a thing, connected with attention. So attention follows where that volition goes, where that desire goes. And where we place attention, the experience of world appears. So if the attention goes to a memory, then we have the experience of that memory, and that becomes, for a moment or two, that becomes the sense of our world. Or if the attention goes outside the window, then that sense of the world, of the view, appears. So the world appears internally, externally, dependent upon this faculty of attention. And attention untrained, is it just that the volitional aspect, the often unconscious movement of desire, volition, the scanning and seeking, drives attention to sort of wander all over the place. This attention, this faculty of mind. And then when there is attention rests upon an experience of, through the sense doors, there's this experience of contact. There's a sense of me and the sense of world, and between the two there's a place of contact. And in that contact, there's always a feeling tone, converging on feeling. So arising on contact, contact arises, and the sense of subject, object, me, you, differentiation. And within that, at the core of that experience, is usually some quality of feeling. And in that feeling, it can be very neutral, perhaps. You know, you look at the view. It can be just pure seeing and a receptive view. But often there's a projection from the mind. Isn't that beautiful? You know, and as soon as that happens, we're not really seeing actually what's there. We're seeing our description. And that happens so quickly and so immediately, that construct of our experience of the world, to the point that we actually don't really see purely. We're seeing in the end the projection of the mind, and we see through that lens. And generally, you know, when we come to how we perceive the other, it's very hard to really see other without the projective conditioning of the mind and the lenses through which we see. You know, and often there's a strong emotional component to that. And so the worlds that we create and then we live within, we often don't realize that they are actually constructed from within the deep conditionings of the mind. And they're also constructed and generated through this what's called mano-vijnana, the consciousness of mano, of thought, and an aspect of mind that goes out and differentiates through naming, through the sense of I am different from that, through designation, through language. So this mano-vijnana objectifies, basically. It creates objects to us. So things aren't necessarily transient, fluid, dynamic unfolding of reality. We start to live with these sort of rather clunky definitions and objectifications of and conditioned by very deep narratives that are learnt or passed on generationally, socially conditioned in, through schooling, through bias, through views, through opinions. We start to live in these very sort of increasingly narrow walls of the mind. And so that's why the Heart Sutra, leaping beyond the walls of the mind, is where we're at, or what where we'd like to be at. So this mano-vijnana is generated and connected with the wandering attention. And it has a very important function. We could judge that and say we shouldn't differentiate, we shouldn't objectify, we shouldn't name, we shouldn't have language. But if all of that collapsed, well, actually, if all of that collapsed, it'd probably be pretty cool. But it also could be a psychotic break, you know, where you get very kind of a rapid deconstruction of the structures of self and world, which doesn't always go well if it's not contained and guided and supported with a depth of wisdom, clarity, compassion, maturity of practice. So it's not necessarily the deconstruction of mano-vijnana is a bad thing. In some ways and in some practices, that's deliberately aimed for at speed. But it doesn't always go well if there's not some integration and some understanding of where do we deconstruct into and what holds the ground. So this other dimension of mind, the citta, is all within the one mind, that which goes out, differentiates, and then that which actually receives the experience of what we're differentiating around, the objective experience, that which feels and receives. So the citta, the heart, is this essentially the nature of the deep citta, the deep sense of heart, the deep awareness, is this fundamental feeling of beingness, I am. It's a sensitive, receptive, it gets impacted by what is experienced. And it also has its own patternings and layerings. So pure citta, as we've been contemplated, is contemplating, and as Ajahn Mahabhoa pointed to, the undifferentiated pure citta he equated with nirvana. The unconditioned, unconstructed, the timeless, the pure awareness, So this is the I am as the sense of self, as that dissolves, it becomes the integral experience of pure beingness before the I am this or I am that starts to play out. But the citta, mostly how we experience the citta or this inner sense of me, basically, is not from the pure, undifferentiated awareness. It's mostly the citta that's conditioned and layered and patterned through all of our experiences, and particularly patterned and the patterning fueled by strong emotional content. So the patterning constructs of the citta are these mechanisms of so-called sanya, vedana, sankhara, in the paticca samuppada, the dependent arising of the experience of self and other. Sanya is this perceptual framework, how we experience familiarity. I can designate and understand what I'm looking at because of sanya. And we know, when people say get dementia, that ability to translate what is perceived into the process of familiarity and then to place the experience and make sense of it and to operate within that construct dissolves. And so it's very, very hard then to negotiate through the world. So sanya is this sort of memory, familiarity, perceptual framework that we rely on to actually place ourselves. Sanya, but it also starts to layer and pattern the citta. The constructs of what we perceive, connected with this vedana, what we perceive is often connected and grounded in and arising, co-arising with this feeling. This powerful experience we have as humans is what we feel. And feeling, when it's purified, vedana, becomes a conduit for, it becomes an aspect of wise, intuitive intelligence. It's a medium through which of information, of pure information. And so when it's uncluttered, we have access to intuition. And that's another portal of knowing, not just the cognitive frames that we think things through, the vedana unfettered, intuitive, is connected with the prajna or panya wisdom. It's very dynamic, very fluid, and sort of quantum-like in its, I think Einstein would say, he didn't get to his insights just through thinking about. These were quantum leaps of intuitive understanding. Through the medium, yes, the subtle, when thought is also coupled with samadhi, and not just clonking around and patterned and obsessive, then it becomes very lucid, creative. And coupled with that pure arising of intuitive knowledge. But usually our feeling nature is very cluttered. And so in meditation we're purifying vedana by healing and transforming the emotional feeling tones that often are connected also with some very deep levels of wounding and trauma that get carried in the system, get carried generationally, and all of this is part of our work. But all of the patterning of feeling, and then all of this begins to create with the patterning of the citta of the heart. It's called sankhara, that which is put together, and shapes and patterns and gives a shape around this is who I am, this is the sense of self, this is what the world is, this is how I view things. So a lot of what we come into contact with when we take our attention inward is the sankhara, the patternings of the citta. Patternings overlaying the innate purity of the heart. And I say purity, not designating and making a sort of judgment about pure and impure. We can get into that. It's not like the conditions, you know, got to be, you know, sometimes in the spiritual life, this purity thing can become projected onto the world of form, and that, you know, you look at the whole, some of the whole classifications of beings, and, you know, are they pure, are they not, and, you know, all of that gets very problematic territory, this sort of seeking for purity, and then the skewering and the denial and the judgment of what we consider to be impure or not acceptable. And this word is problematic, but pure, the purity of the citta is really the unconditioned heart, just pure, in the purest sense of the word, awareness. So this is the beginning of the Mula Sutta. These four phrases are talking about the arising of conditionality, as both the citta, when it projects inwardly through this patterning, it creates the sense of self. When it projects outwardly, it generates the sense of world. And in relationship, object, subject, subject, object, world and self, there is a dynamic. And often that's tinged and quite fraught with layerings of unconsidered reactivity, undigested and conditioning and emotional response. So as we begin to meditate, then, you know, the diagnostic, and then, you know, this is another way, the Mula Sutta is just another way of talking about the four truths, as is the Paticca-samuppada, the dependent arising. So you sort of pick up the hood of the car. The four truths is like the car, and then as you start to pick it up and look at the detail of the engine, you can start to name the different, the engine of samsara, what kind of moves all of this. You start to get the components. It's not a mystery so much. You start to break it down and see these components as they operate and fire off each other. But then the medicine, so the Buddha diagnoses the problem, and then, or the dynamic, and then he starts to bring the medicine, headed by samadhi, ruled by mindfulness, surmounted by wisdom, are all things. So this, as we train attention that goes out following the vagaries of the untrained mind, we take that attention and the manovijnana, that part of the mind that goes out and creates in the world, designates in the world, explores the world, objectifies, we take that aspect which is connected with attention and bring it, that attention back to where it needs to go, to the citta, to the heart. So we place attention, the manovijnana, we withdraw it from its wanderings in the world and bring it back to its home base. You know, and it starts to contemplate this yoniso manisikara that Kittisaro was talking about yesterday, the holding of all of this in the yoni, in the womb of awareness, the mind, putting the constructs of the mind, creations of the mind, encourage them to come and be held. This is the samadhi, the citta in samadhi, as attention, moments of attention back to how it is, breath, body, the experience of the citta, the samadhi, the stabilization to whatever degree, the gathering and the ability to contain what is, what our experience is, and then not only to contain and to hold in this samadhi womb presence of awareness, but to contemplate what's happening here, ruled by sati, mindfulness is applied. The exploration, the vipassana, the dhamma vijaya, the exploration of the thingness of what is created. And that is the experience of self, the experience of construct, the experience of world. Surmounted by wisdom, investigated through punya. So this, you know, when there's this natural, so then the natural state of the citta, this which is illuminating already, already has. It's not like we have to go and gain panya, you know, somehow that we stack it up. It's the natural function of the heart. We already have it. We already have this wisely reflecting nature. It's our birthright. It's what makes us human. Not all creatures have this. They have emotion and they have feeling and they have perception and they have drives, but they don't necessarily have this reflective capacity. So this crucial piece, mindful, reflective capacity, reflecting on how it is, what is arising through a particular lens, not the lens of reactivity and preference and my views and my version of the world. And may I fit everything into that, come what may, and judge everything else that doesn't fit it. So the Buddha says, you know, in the Heart Sutra, Avalokiteshvara. Avalokiteshvara is the deep jita, the pure jita, teaching Sariputra the brilliance of the mind. You know, Sariputra was profound in wisdom and understood, you know, the vipassana. We look at the objects of experience and we can understand a lot and have great brilliance and great wisdom. But Avalokiteshvara is saying, look deeper, course the depths of reality, course the depths of the heart. It's not finished. You know, so it's a teaching that Avalokiteshvara is giving to this brilliant mind of ours, because it is, the Manovijnana is spectacular. Look what it's done. But it's saying there's some place that you need to return to. Go to the depths of the citta of the heart and look again. So rather than the lens of reactivity and our preference and our view and our familiarity, we look through in the Heart Sutra, the five skandhas, the five khandhas, form. How is the body? What's felt here? What's the experience, the sensation? What is really mine here? So we're applying wisdom. What do I actually feel like I own this? Clearly we do. You know, but it didn't, my body didn't ask me when my tooth fell out the other day when I ate chocolate. It didn't say, excuse me, Tanisra, is it okay if I just crack open your tooth? I don't remember asking me permission. You know, it just did it. So, you know, who is being owned here? So contemplating body, form, and forms, the forms of experience. You know, what is here? So when we come into contact from avijja, for not this deep prajna, contemplation of the mind, but through ignorance, through our biases, through the conditionality, the not, you know, not having, seeing what is, then we generate this experience of dukkha and samsara. But when there's vijja, you know, pure just contemplation, how it is how it is, this sensation, this experience of form, then it becomes dharma. Yeah, it's not that we're judging what is from the projections of the mind, bad, good, like, don't like. It all becomes nature. It's all dharma. Even the most venal politician in the land, and we won't say who that is right now, we want to activate ourselves. You know, the most, you know, the expression of the most twisted shadow king, the ego gone insane, dominating, or trying to dominate and hold the power. You know, this is, you know, we could say that's not dharma. You know, it's only the good stuff, you know, only the beauty. But it's all, there's nothing outside the dharma realm. You know, shadow and light and the play of both, Mara and awakening, are deeply interplaying with them, each other. So it's all dharma. So rather than I don't like and I react and I hate and I judge, this deep contemplation of the Heart Sutra, Avalokiteshvara, coursing the depths of reality. This is reality. That the manifestation, the endless play of light and shadow. Yeah, so we contemplate that rather than react so violently and emotionally, and that too. So contemplating form, contemplating feeling, contemplating perceptions, connecting with our thinking, contemplating sankhara, the patternings, our habits, our tendencies, you know, connected often with very deep emotional component. How does the sense of self is shaped? What is its narratives? What is its tendencies? Like I was saying yesterday morning in the Qigong, my profound tendency to want to stay under the duvet, the vipavadana, the not wanting to be here tendency of the mind. Mm. Contemplating vijnana, this fifth skanda of the sensory consciousness, the dualistic consciousness that's constantly arising, me, you, through the sense door, moments of seeing and thinking and hearing and tasting and touching and smelling. You know, there's always this arise. So this deep contemplation, this is a way that the Buddha categorized through the five khandhas our experience. He said it's a bit like if you say the river Ganges, we all know what that is. We have a picture of it, we might have even been there and sat on the ghats and drank some chai and, you know, say, I'm sitting at the river Ganges. But if you actually put your fingers into the river Ganges and pick that up and try and hold it, you see that there's nothing you can hold. This is an analogy that the Buddha gave, just bubbles, and bursting bubbles at that. You say the river Ganges, but in the moment of actual contact through the contemplation of the reality of what is, there's nothing actually there. And in the same way, the Buddha said these five skandhas that constitute the experience of self in the world through the eye of wise reflection. If you actually start to really, this sort of wisdom, we have the very receptive, opening, allowing, compassionate, but also sometimes that can go into, we just allow everything. You know, we just stew over and over again in these old storylines and our old hurts and our old this, that and the other. But this sort of wisdom is like a challenge. It's like, what are you really building your house on here? What are you really investing in your energy here? You don't have a lot of it and a lot of time in this form and in this way with these opportunities. So the sword of wisdom, use it to really challenge yourself sometimes. And challenge where we hang out, challenge these moods. And to keep, not to do that without compassion, but with a clarity of looking. And so, as you know, when the Buddha said, when we see in that way, we see anicca. We see the volatility of the ephemeral change. We see dukkha. It's not that it's necessarily suffering, but it's not dependable. It's we don't completely lean on that state, on that feeling, on that place, on that dwelling, on that job, on this body, on our health, on our bank account. We might be careful of that, but we don't put every piece of our commitment into that, because it's dukkha, it's unreliable, it's anatta. You won't find yourself there. You won't find your home there. So that is yielding deliverance as essence, merging in the deathless, terminating in nibbana. Where do we find our home? You know, as the revelation of insight, naturally, it's not that we have to look, we have to find, because our natural state is already yielding deliverance as essence, revealing that the essence of all conditions, all forms, all situations are already perfectly here, manifesting, suffused with consciousness. Freedom, consciousness. It's free. That's the only place of freedom, ultimately. And it's the ground of our being, already merging in the deathless. Already, that's, you know, everything is already dissolving. You try and hold it, it's already, it's all dissolving all the time. And it's, as our teacher Ajahn Sumedho said, any condition will be like a taxi home. Take a thought, even the most despicable thought you can possibly have. I won't repeat mine. But, you know, I'll say like a, just a simple thought. My name is Tanisara, and it's a construct. But then at the end of that thought, there's the silence, the presence, the awareness, the living silence. Terminating in peace. So when that means that when we recognize this, that means we taste peace. We taste the freedom of our innate being. We recognize what really, let's say we are, but what really we are. And always have been, always will be, and whatever conditions arise and pass, they're arising and passing in the field of the undying, unborn, unoriginated awareness, presence. Call it what you like, it's just a word. There is no name, of course. The essence of pure consciousness as the ground of the manifested and unmanifested, as in the Shurangama Sutra, where form is already empty. Emptiness is already manifesting as form. There is no division. Ultimately, there is only the leap beyond the walls of the mind, the leaving of dream thinking behind. Ultimately, here we are. So Avalokiteshvara teaching this is pointing to us to engage this work. Avalokiteshvara is not only the master of wisdom, but is also the mistress of compassion. So we contemplate, you know, whatever is arising, our obstructions, our sankhara, the forms of existence, from deep compassion, not the compassion that objectifies, but the compassion that feels the intimacy with all phenomena, all experience. So as the Buddha encouraged to practice this, we practice this. Kirisara gave some tips last night. Not only noticing the forms, but noticing the space. Not only being stuck to the internal narratives and thinking and cognition, but noticing the silence. Not only seeing the phenomena, but turning the mind back, turning this attention, this mano vijnana. Who is the one listening? What is listening? Who is thinking? Who is trying to get there? Who doesn't understand? So emptying out the structures of self. What remains? What always is? Or as the Buddha taught Bahiya, the disciple that is called the disciple most quick to understand. Bahiya was walking in the marketplace and he saw the Buddha on arms round and he went up, "Hey Buddha, give me a teaching." And the Buddha said, "This isn't the right time and place." He didn't say it like that. He said, "Lord Buddha, most radiant ocean of wisdom and compassion, please, out of compassion." This is really how one should approach the teachings. I remember once I was teaching in South Africa and this guy goes, "Look, I paid my money, just give it to me in a nutshell." And then when we first came, the very, very first time we taught in Johannesburg, as in 94, you know, it was a real trip arriving in South Africa, and then we gave this Dharma talk, and this guy comes in with a gun on his, you know, and sits at the back, and it's like this sort of big guy, he's like this gun, and in the end he goes, okay, I heard all that. What about emptiness? I don't hear anything about emptiness. He's like, okay, he's got a gun. I'm going to say something about emptiness. And you have to say, well, let's just stop saying, you're not very empty right now. The vagaries of South Africa. So Lord Buddha, so Bahia, so, you know, please give me a teaching. He asked three times. If you ask a Buddha three times, apparently it's very hard for them to say anything else but to respond to the request. And so the Buddha said, you know, Bahia, in the seen is just the seen, in the heard is just the heard, in the sensed is only the sensed, in the cognized thinking is only the cognized. Thus you should see that indeed there is no thing here, there is no thing there. This, Bahia, is how you should train yourself. So in the seen, when we see something, we go, tree, look at that, isn't it beautiful? I wonder where I should walk. Should I go to the river? Should I go? And so really we take a walk, but we're just walking in our own mind. Really. We might occasionally go, oh, it's nice, it's lovely. And then but what is it if we just see and just soften the gaze and allow what we're looking at to come to us rather than the manovijnana goes out and it fixes and separates out. So soften, allow, like if I'm in this room now, now, if I look at an individual, my mind creates the person, and then I might have a story, and then I might have an emotional content, and I might have a history, and, you know, then it woof, woof, woof. If I'm soft and I allow the forms to come, then I'm included in that. The sense of the looking and what's looked at starts to merge. And that's a very different relationship. You know, you look at the star and you do that. At a certain point, the star and what is looking at the star, there's a moment of complete connection. Yeah. And the seeing is just the seeing. There's not really a self and another. That's the creation of the mind. In the heard is just the hearing. So we hear, I was like, the elks. Oh, the elks. You know, like, open my door, I can hear the elks, you know. And I was saying to someone yesterday, like I heard outside last night, this chomping, the night before last, this chomping outside my window at night. I was like, it's the elks, the elks. I've never seen an elk. You know, so I'm so excited about it. I'm to hear them. My man, oh dear, the elks. I mean, I've never heard anything like that in my life. And so like, it's an elk outside. So I'm like, I'm getting my torch and trying to open so I don't. And then the light flashes back in my face. I can't see, you know, I have to push it through the, you know. So I eventually get somehow to kind of look outside the moonlight, and I'm waiting to see an elk, and there's this huge cow. I was like, you know, and I was like, the disappointment in my mind. I said, well, you know, you shouldn't be disappointed, the beautiful cow. And so my mind is just, oh, you know, it's like at midnight, you know, this sort of like, oh. You know, so in the scene, it's just like in the herd, you know, it's just, can you just hear sound without creating the world around it? You know, so the practice of hearing, just pure hearing, pure sensing. So the sensory doors, you know, sometimes they get a bad rap in Buddhism. The sensory, the pure sensing of the sensory experience, just as is actually very blissful. Just is. And then in the most subtle, the cognized, the thinking, you know, that really catches us. It's so compelling. My thoughts, man, they're really true, you know. And they really describe to me all the time about how it is. And I believe them. You know, and that's, but to a moment that was sort of wisdom. Who's thinking this? Actually, which agenda is this? Whose agenda is this? Where is this voice coming from? Is it really serving awakening? You know, this is thinking. What is the quality of thinking? Is it tinged with aversion, with desire, with confusion? Is it collapsing me? Is it, you know, like elevating and grandiosity? So check it out. So I said that Bahia got the teaching awakened in the moment and then gored by a bull and died. That's why he was called the quickest one to get the teaching awakened and then pass on to the next realm. So, you never know. So we have our practice, we have a day, we have a beautiful setting, we have a support, we have food, we have, it's all here for us. May we use the time well, may we be supported, may it be a good day. Mm-hmm.